When your life is determined to follow Jesus, and when Jesus is your main thing, then all the other stuff kind of has a way of falling into place.
Pastor Brett Metter reminds us of Scripture's promise that in whatever state you're in, you'll find contentment following Jesus.
You have to understand, where does contentment come from? It's something you learn. It actually comes from within. See, learning to be content is not as much about your situation, but about Christ's invitation for you to follow Him, to serve Him, to worship Him.
In our continuing study series in the Gospel of John, Pastor Brett Metter has looked at Jesus' I am statements and his sayings on the cross. But in today's Word, we'll learn the significance of three invitations of Jesus, beginning with his offer to come and see how the joy and contentment we seek isn't found in any of the world's offerings, but in a relationship with Him.
Two little teardrops floating down the river of life, one said to the other, "Who are you?" The teardrop said, "I'm from a girl who loved a man but lost him. Who are you?" And the other teardrop said, "Well, I'm the teardrop of the girl that got him." It's funny how we shed a tear for things we think we want, but it can be twice as bad if we get it. And oftentimes the things we think would make us happy really don't. I'd be happy only if I had this or that or the other thing. And we know just that next level, oh, that'll bring real happiness. And we may know that even that coming out of our mouths sounds so ridiculous. We know it's not true, but there's something deep within us that still kind of feels that that's the truth. You know that if you won the lottery today, that wouldn't make your life perfect. You're like, "I think I kind of would, Brett, if I could win the lottery." But you know, the history has countless examples of winners whose lives took a turn for the worse the moment they won the lottery. In fact, consider Denise Rossi. When Denise Rossi won $1.3 million in the California lotto, she kept the news to herself and abruptly demanded a divorce from her husband, Thomas, without a word. Thomas was shocked, but agreed to divorce her anyway. During the proceedings, Denise continued to keep her good fortune a secret. Well, 2 years later, Thomas intercepted a letter at his new Los Angeles home revealing the truth of her winnings. He sued Denise for not disclosing her winnings in the divorce, and the judge awarded Thomas every cent of the award. That was a bad day for Denise Rossi. But it gets much worse than that. William Bud Post, he won $16.2 million in the Pennsylvania lottery, but was within 1 year, $1 million in debt. He said, "I wish it never happened," Post said. It was totally a nightmare. What happened to him? Well, a former girlfriend during that year successfully sued him for one-third of his winnings. His brother was arrested for allegedly hiring a hitman to kill him in the hopes that he'd inherit a share of the winnings. After sinking money into the family business, Post sank into debt and spent time in jail for firing a gun over the head of a bill collector. He said, "I was much happier when I was broke," he said to the Washington Post. Bud ended up, after getting out of prison, lived quietly on $450 a month and food stamps until his death. Jackson Whitaker Jr., when it comes to bad money habits, Jackson Whitaker takes the cake. He won a $315 million Powerball jackpot. At that time, it was the largest single-ticket lottery win in the United States history. The 55-year-old opted for the lump sum payment that, after taxes, came out to $113.4 million. But almost like biblically proportioned plagues, his life just was full of problems. His wife divorced him. His 17-year-old granddaughter, struggling with drug addiction at the time, was found dead in a van. His daughter contracted cancer and died. One of his properties burned to the ground. He was the target of repeated theft and was sued on numerous occasions, mostly by employees at casinos where he would regularly frequent. Drinking and gambling became a big issue for him. An interesting side note about Whitaker is before he won the lottery, he was worth about $17 million from his construction business in Putnam County, West Virginia. Sadly, Whitaker died broke in 2020 at 72 years old. And the stories just go on and on. If you look it up, it's kind of shocking of all the horrible stories when people win the lottery that they end up. In fact, it was Whitaker who said, "I should have tore that ticket up the day I bought it." That's what he said. "No, Brett, it's not money. I'm not interested in that. I understand the frailty of money and the fickleness of riches. I get that. What I need, Pastor Brett, is a husband. I'm tired of being single. I need to be married. I need relationships in my life. I'm lonely and alone." I get it. That's a problem. In fact, we deal with that all the time. As a pastor team here at Athey Creek, the second most talked about, counseled, cared about issue that we talk about is to our single people. Man, we have singles who really are struggling with that and wish they could be married. And I get that. The number one problem is those that are married. That's our number one. That's our number one counseling situation. That's not a joke. You guys are all laughing. I was very serious about that. It's just true. But what does the Bible teach? Well, Paul the Apostle is sort of the standard for us because here's a guy who had a lot of trouble. You might argue there's nobody in this room who's struggled with life more than the Apostle Paul. I mean, he was whipped like scourge whip, like Jesus-style whipping on his back 5 times. He was shipwrecked. He was bit by a viper. They killed him. Like, they literally stoned him to death. He was under a pile of rocks, but God didn't want him to be dead at that point. So he sort of revived him, and he comes up out of the pile of rocks, and he goes back into the city and starts preaching again. I'm like, that's a tough day at the office right there. Paul had all kinds of trouble, but Paul was a guy who sort of moved with sort of a joy and a peace. He called it the peace that passes understanding. Paul was a guy who moved with what he would also call contentment. Contentment. In fact, I love it. It's Philippians 4, one of the more famous passages. You know, I love the book of Philippians. Paul was shackled to a Roman guard in prison, really, when he wrote the book of Philippians. And it's really about joy and rejoicing. 19 times Paul says joy or rejoicing in the book of Philippians. And here's what he says in Philippians 4:10. But I rejoiced in the Lord greatly that now at the last your care of me has flourished again, wherein you were also careful, but you lacked opportunity. Not that I speak in respect of want, for I have learned in whatsoever state I am therewith to be content. I know both how to be abased, I know how to abound everywhere and in all things. I am instructed both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ, which strengtheneth me. Now, a couple things about this. Before you go and tattoo verse 13 on your shoulders, Philippians 4:13. Yeah, I can do all things through Christ. You know, UFC fighters, they have that. A lot of fighters have that. Philippians 4:13. The problem is they don't know the context of this passage. What's the context? He's saying, I can be a winner or I can be a loser. I can do all things. And he says, I know both how to be abased, which means put down, and I know how to abound. That means be put up. I know how to be full. I know how to be starving. That's what he's saying. I know how to abound, and I also know how to suffer. I can do all things, whether it's suffering or abounding, starving or full, I can do all things. See, that's the problem. They don't really realize that's what he's saying. That's what that scripture actually means. It's funny how we often use scriptures like that out of context. Be that as it may, he's in this place of great spiritual maturity. He says, whatsoever state I am, therewith I'm content. I've just learned to be content. And that's the key. I've highlighted for I have learned, because this is where I think we get it wrong. You know, no one gave Paul the gift of contentment. Some of you might say, well, I'm not really gifted in that area. That's not my gifting, contentment. I'm actually discontented all the time. That's my gift. No, that's not Paul. No one gave him a gift of contentment. He had to learn it. No one bought him contentment with money. He didn't just have so much wealth that he finally was purchasing himself into full-on contentment. Finally got the house he wanted. Finally got the car he wanted. Nope, that actually never happens. The wealthiest people in the world are often the most discontent. But you know what? He says, I have learned, whatever state I'm in, I've learned to be content. And so you have to understand, where does contentment come from? It's something you learn. It actually comes from within, not from without. Contentment isn't dictated to Paul by his circumstances, but as you learn about Paul, it was dictated by his relationship to Jesus Christ. It was not about a position, it was about a person. And he models for us. Paul is the perfect model, a life of joy and contentment, even in the midst of all kinds of horrible circumstances. So he says, learn to be content. That's what I've done. Sometimes I wonder, does the Lord keep you in a place of trouble because he's wanting to teach you something about learning to be content? Have you ever noticed that sometimes the Lord will fix your situation once you actually finally are content? It's funny how the Lord, I think, sometimes will allow you to go through difficult things or things that aren't easy, because he wants you to learn what Paul, for I have learned in what service therewith to be content. So this is what happens. We have to learn this. Now, Paul, in saying this, one of the things, if you read the rest of Paul's writings, you realize that he learns to be content, but the way he learns it, it really is about Jesus Christ. Paul was all about Jesus. Remember, Paul said, I have determined to know nothing except Jesus Christ and him crucified. Jesus was the whole thing. See, learning to be content is not as much about your situation, but about Christ's invitation for you to follow him, to serve him, to worship him. When your life is determined to follow Jesus, and when Jesus is your main thing, then all the other stuff kind of has a way of falling into place. And I believe the way you and I best learn to be content in this life is to actually learn the invitations of Jesus. Jesus, in the Gospel of John, gives us three invitations that are, I think, of huge importance as I look at it, as I see the story. And I think it'd be worth us taking, before we leave the Gospel of John, I wanted you to see the three main invitations of the Gospel of John. There's other invitations that Jesus gives in other Gospels, but if you just look at the Gospel of John, well, let me show you the three. Number one, Jesus said, come and see. Come and see. It's John chapter 1, verse 39, where he says to them, come and see. And they came and saw where he dwelt and abode with him that day, for it was about the 10th hour. Context of this little verse here, well, it was before Jesus had chosen all the disciples. But Andrew, who was actually a disciple of John the Baptist, yep, John the Baptist had his own disciples. But John the Baptist, his whole thing was pointing to the coming Jesus, the Lamb of God that would take away the sins of the world. And John prepared the way for Jesus. So his disciples, including Andrew, were curious. So they went and found Jesus, the one John the Baptist was preparing the way for. And their introduction seemed pretty casual, but where are you staying? What are you doing? They said to Jesus. And Jesus said to them, come and see. And it would be from that moment onward that Andrew and the other disciple would follow Jesus as his disciples. No longer disciples of J the B, but now Andrew would be there following Jesus. If you follow the rest of the story, he'd say, come and see, and then he'd say, follow me. In the other Gospels, we read that. Notice there's a nuance here that I think is worth noting, especially when it comes to things of faith. Because this is a big deal for these two guys to say, we're gonna follow Jesus Christ. We're gonna come with him and see what his thing is. Notice the nuance. He didn't say, see and come. That's an important thing to note. And especially in our previous studies, who was the disciple that had to see and then come? Remember Thomas there in John chapter 20? The disciple says, hey, we saw Jesus. And Thomas is like, I don't believe you. I won't believe you unless I can put my finger in the hole in his hands and thrust my fist in the hole in his side. And if I see that, then I'll believe, but I will not believe without seeing. And then Jesus appears to them there in the upper room, and Thomas is there. And Jesus says, okay, Thomas, here, put your finger in the hole in my hands. Put your fist in the hole in my side. And Jesus said, Thomas, and this is like almost like the last of the Beatitudes, if you would. Jesus said, blessed are they which believe without seeing. You see, that's the thing. Andrew and this other disciple, when Jesus said, come and see, they had a decision to make. Were they gonna come and see and then follow Jesus as disciples? There's faith involved in the process. You know, it's funny how I think we Christians sometimes apologize. Well, yeah, I guess it gets down to faith. But can I just say everything gets down to faith? And it's amazing to me that the atheist acts like they don't have any faith. We are faithless. We don't have faith. They've got crazy level faith. Atheists have way more faith than I would ever have as a Christian. What do you mean, Brett? I'm an atheist and I don't have faith. No, yeah, you really do. Do you believe that you have a brain? Have you ever seen your brain? Do you know for sure you have a brain? See, because the atheist thing is, I have to see it to believe it. And you can't prove God's existence because you can't see him. Well, yeah, but we believe there's God and we think there's evidence of God, just like there's evidence that hopefully you have a brain. But it's interesting, you know, faith is something that's huge. Ironically, some of the most hardcore faith that I see comes from atheists in areas of things like creation itself. I mean, suppose I took you to Mount Rushmore. There we are looking up on the mountain and I just say, wow, isn't it amazing? How, like, wow, look at that. That's George Washington. Like, that's amazing. What a coincidence that the water just trickled down. And after billions and billions of years, the water carved George. And then who's that? Thomas Jefferson. Wow. And Roosevelt and Abraham Lincoln. Wow. What an amazing, fortuitous set of circumstances. No, you actually kind of say, Brett, you're wacko. We know that there was some guys that said, hey, let's make a fancy carving in a mountain. And they had a plan and they had blueprints and they went with chisels and hammers and scaffolding. And there was an intelligent thought process that went behind making Mount Rushmore. You see, it's funny because that's really what the atheist has faith to say, that the world just started with a big bang, giant explosion from total chaos. And the evolutionist has to believe something that to me is so far-fetched. It's amazing they pull it over on people. I still marvel that people believe that you go from an explosion to kind of what we're looking at right here. Technology and people with thoughts and souls. And if you go down to the molecular level, like your polynucleotide strands of your own DNA, their structure and sequence, and you're saying all that just happened at the explosion of the Big Bang? Do you understand? The odds of rain carving Mount Rushmore are way more likely than just an explosion to get to the microorganisms in your body or the polynucleotide strands of your DNA. Like, it's amazing how people just don't really realize or think about that for a second. It takes crazy level faith to believe in so-called evolution. By the way, the more we understand, some of these things in science, which, science, I believe, supports creation in a beautiful way. And at least we start with something. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. We say that. You say, as an evolutionist, in the beginning, nothing. And all of a sudden, there was something. Poof. Which one takes more faith? You see, the point is, Jesus invites you to come and see him, which does require faith. But we as Christians shouldn't be apologetic about that. Everything in this world takes faith to believe certain things. And it's amazing what the secular world is willing to believe over just something simple, that I'm going to take a step of faith and believe and follow Jesus. Jesus said, come and see. What an important and a huge invitation that we've been given. But that's the first one. The second one, invitation in the Gospel of John, is not only come and see, but the second one is come and drink. Come and drink. In John chapter 7, verse 37 and 38, it says, in the last day of that great day of the feast, Jesus stood and cried, saying, if any man thirst, let him come unto me and drink. He that believeth on me, as the scripture hath said, out of his belly shall flow rivers of living water. So the first thing Jesus invites us is come and see. But once we come and see who Jesus is and what he does, we realize he wants to be this refreshing source of joy and refreshment in your life. I love this idea of come and drink. Have you ever just been really thirsty? I believe today what we're seeing in the world is a deep thirst for the Lord. Whether people know it or not, they don't even know what they're thirsty for, but people are thirsty. People are upset. People are thirsty for Jesus, whether they know it or not. But the world gives you all kinds of alternatives to Jesus. Oh, don't drink of Jesus, the living water, like Jesus talks about, but drink of what we have to offer. And the world will give you all kinds of things to drink, but it's nothing like the pristine living water of Jesus Christ. I loved a good glass of ice water. Man, when we were in Europe, we just happened to be in Greece, the hottest week on record in history. It was very hot while we were there. But we'd go into these restaurants, and if you've ever been to mostly much of Europe, have you ever asked for some ice water? Have you ever asked for that? They kind of look at you like, what? It's amazing. In Europe, like, you ask for ice, and they look at you kind of weirdly at a restaurant, and they go, okay, and they walk out, and they bring a bowl of ice and set it in the middle of the table like, there's your ice. You're like, thank you. It's like, they don't even know how to do it. Like, it's hilarious. But everybody's fighting for the ice, in the bowl, that the three cubes that they gave you, for your glass of ice water. But I just love a nice, refreshing glass of water. And there's nothing better when you're thirsty. Oh, man, to drink it down. When I think of the world, Jesus says, come unto me and drink. But the world says, no, no, no. Come to us and drink. And what we'll give you is great. We'll give you life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. Oh, that's all that they'll give you is a pursuit of happiness. We'll give you a way to drown your sorrows. And man, they'll give you addiction. We'll give you answers to all your problems. The world offers all kinds of solutions. The problem is, it's not good. And you'll find that to be true. That's why the world right now is thirsty. And I believe, as Christians, something for you to be aware of, when you come and say, Jesus is the water of life, when you come and say, Jesus is the one that will satisfy your thirsty soul, I think that resonates in a lot of people today. You might forget how the world is really thirsty right now. They're thirsting for something. I'm not sure they know what it is, but it's actually they're thirsting for Christ. And you and I have an opportunity to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ to those that are thirsty. I'm reminded of the woman at the well. She came with her water pots to get water out of a well. And Jesus came and said, woman, why don't you give me something to drink? And she says, how is it that you, being a Jew, ask of me, a woman of Samaria, to give you water to drink? Like, that was so taboo in that culture. She's like, why are you doing this? And Jesus then used her question to say, well, if you only knew of the water that I have to give you, you'd ask and I would give you living water. Now, what's living water? Why is this, like even in our text here in John 7:37, why is they, you know, verse 38, flow rivers of living water? Well, the difference is muddy water in an igloo cooler, a puddle, or flowing creek from the mountain. That's really what the Lord is. The world offers the mud puddle, but Jesus is the living water. And that's what Jesus told the woman at the well. If you drink of the water, I'll give you living water and you'll never thirst. He says it's a well of water springing up to everlasting life. That's what he told the woman. Well, the woman, after she realizes who Jesus is, after the conversation's over, she leaves her water pots. Why? Because the thing she was trying to get was earthly water where she'd thirst again. But Jesus met her need. She leaves her water pots and goes into the town and tells everybody, I've met the Messiah. You know, it's so cool because Jesus is the quenching of the thirst that so many people have. And so many people will try the water of this world, money or notoriety, influence or fame. The celebrity of today is all but forgotten tomorrow, especially in this modern day where influencers and celebrities come and go so fast. Celebrity is fleeting, but fame is weak. In fact, the celebrities hate being celebrities. Once they become celebrities, they're really bummed out by being celebrity. Because it's fickle and it's no good. It's just a muddy puddle of water. You know, whether it's fame, power, or even seeking after pleasure. Some people are seeking pleasure in their lives, thinking, man, if I could just, you know, have that sexual relationship. Or maybe it's not even that, you know, sort of sinister. Maybe it's if I could just go on that vacation and if I could just sit on the beach and be under a palm tree and sip a, you know, tropical drink or something, then I'll be happy. But you'll find that's not the thing. You need actually something that will fill your soul that is thirsty. And the only thing that quenches that thirst is Jesus. We try to search for satisfaction, but Jesus says, come to me and drink. And I guarantee that the thirst will be no more if you follow Christ.
Pastor Brett Metter is just partway through an important study of the invitations of Jesus found in the Gospel of John and how the living water Jesus offers is truly the only way to satisfy a thirsty soul. And you're listening to Today's Word, and hope you'll stay right there as Pastor Brett will be back to join me in just a moment. Today's Word is the radio ministry of Athey Creek Church, just south of Portland, Oregon, where Pastor Brett Metter is the senior pastor. If you've missed any portion of this message, you'll find all of Pastor Brett's messages online at todayswordradio.com. Well, Pastor Brett is with me now. Brett, with the death of Turning Point founder Charlie Kirk, who was only 31 when he died, and the outpouring of emotion and response that followed, especially among young people, do you believe that we may actually be seeing revival in America led by young people?
You know, Kurt, I believe we really are seeing that. It's this stirring of the young people's hearts all throughout history, by the way. You know, when revival breaks out, it's often the younger generation that led the way. And I think the young people, Gen Z, they're challenging the status quo. And they seem to be a generation that's pursuing authenticity. I think they're seeing through the indoctrination of the colleges and universities. And I think they're tired of shallow answers that they've been given. So with Charlie Kirk, he was giving solid answers and he was stirring up so many young people, hugely instrumental in waking up Gen Z, I believe. And so what encourages me is that the gospel speaks right into that longing of young Gen Zers. And we're seeing students gathering in prayer and on campuses, sharing their faith boldly. A few weeks ago, I had a guy show up to church. He came up and said, Pastor Brett, I'm 20 years old and I haven't been to church for a couple of years, haven't read my Bible, but this whole thing that's happening, it's just made me want to follow Jesus. You know, and he asked me, what do I need to do? And I was able to give him some words that just, you know, really simple. It reminds me of what Peter said when he was quoting the prophet Joel. He says, it'll come to pass in the last days, I will pour out my spirit upon all flesh. Your sons and daughters shall prophesy. Your young men shall see visions. And that's a promise that God proves he's not done with this generation.
Well, that is so encouraging, Pastor Brett, to hear that Scripture actually predicts revival and is something that we can be praying for. Well, if you'd like more information about Pastor Brett Metter or Today's Word, you can visit our website at todayswordradio.com. That's todayswordradio.com. And that's all the time we have. Next time, Pastor Brett Metter shares how, after fishing all night and catching nothing, the disciples of Jesus unexpectedly encountered him, who then invites them to do something we do every day. Today's Word with Pastor Brett Metter is an outreach of Athey Creek Church in West Lynn, Oregon.